Hi there, and welcome to a special bonus episode of the Who Goes There podcast. You know, 2020 has been quite a year, and this kind of year, you know, more than most years, can leave a person looking for comfort. And one thing that is possible is comfort reads. And so this is the first one of these. I'm hoping to do a series of them. More on that later. But for the first one, I wanted to cover kind of my own comfort read, and that is The Chronicles of Prydain by Lloyd Alexander. And since I'm not a big fan of just talking to myself, I do have a guest here with me to help me discuss these classic books, and that is my good friend and co-host from Take Me to Your Reader, Colin Cuskey. Hey, Colin.
Hey there.
So let's talk about the history of The Chronicles of Prydain, and then we'll go into kind of our personal history with the titles. These are books that were written between 1964 and 1968. One per year was published, and the titles that we have here are The Book of Three, The Black Cauldron, The Castle of Lear, Tarin Wanderer, and The High King. Mm-hmm. And The Black Cauldron was a Newbery Honor book, so it was a runner-up for the Newbery Award. And The High King was the Newbery Medal winner. So still kind of staying on brand about award-winning books.
Oh, yeah, they're top-notch.
Yeah. Lloyd Alexander was American.
Yeah.
But during World War II, he was stationed in Wales for a short time and just fell in love with the country. And for some of this, I'm indebted to Colin for sending me a link to a YouTube documentary about Lloyd Alexander, which I'll make sure to put in the show notes.
Cool.
So when he eventually wrote what would be his best known works, he did use Wales as an inspiration, and particularly some of their mythology, though he was very quick to say Prydain is not Wales.
Right.
You know, some of the character names are taken, and some of the basic outlines of some of the characters are true to some of the Welsh mythology, but Prydain is its own thing.
I'm willing to bet that some of the descriptions of battle in the later books are definitely influenced by his time in World War II.
I could see that, yeah, although he didn't see combat.
No, but I think he probably knew a lot of people that did.
Yeah, because he was in intelligence, I believe, in counterintelligence.
That sounds right.
So it's interesting to me that, you know, these books sometimes do get pulled up together with something like Lord of the Rings or The Chronicles of Narnia, which is probably a better comparison just because the audience of those skews more towards younger people than Lord of the Rings does.
Can, definitely.
But Lloyd Alexander was American, and that's something I really like about this series is it's very British in a way. And like, if you listen to the audiobooks, the ones with James Langton doing the reading, you know, it's all very British, and fantastic.
Oh yeah. He's got a wonderful voice and it's a good performance. Yeah.
So let's talk about our personal history with these. When did you first encounter them?
Well, I first encountered them in the Cottage Grove Public Library.
I feel like I've heard this story before.
You may have. Yeah. So,
no, I mean, there's so many times when I've asked you what your history with the title was on Take Me to Your Reader. And it's, well, the Cottage Grove Public Library.
Well, you know, for Asimov and Alexander, mm-hmm. the Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew, and a handful of many other things. Yeah. They all came from the little hometown library that I got to access. Hmm. In fact, I was thinking about this on my way back home today after shopping, and I can remember the inside of that library like it's the back of my hand.
Yeah.
So if that library was still standing, and it's not, it's been torn down to make room for other things. But if you went in the front doors, you went around the librarian's desk, into the kids section, into the back of the very first row of shelves, there mm-hmm. were four Lloyd Alexander books, which
Only four?
Is a sad thing. Only four.
Which one was missing?
I believe it was The Castle of Lear. But, you know, that okay. would have been 44 years ago.
Right.
So.
Interesting. I was talking to my mom about this the other day, and she remembers giving me the Book of Three when I was, she said it was either fourth or fifth grade when she gave it to me. And I read them at that point, and I have vivid memories of sharing them with my friends at school. In my sixth grade class, we kind of sat in pods. We had two different classrooms because like the honors students went over to Mrs. Ogdahl's class for English and math and then Mr. Sales class for math. That's right. And so we kind of had adjoining rooms, but in Mrs. Ogdahl's class for English, we sat in kind of big square tables and there were like five or six of us around the tables. And I remember all of us were reading the books at some point. And there was a point where we all had to do a book report and there were five of us. And so we each took one of the books.
Awesome.
Yeah. So that was really cool. And so we could kind of talk to each other about, hey, what happened in this? And what, you know, review and some of the plot details and stuff. But the strange thing is, though I deeply loved these books at that time, I did not come back to them any more in adolescence until adulthood. So what about you?
I think I did exactly the same thing. I kind of graduated from there into science fiction and then high fantasy with Terry Brooks.
Okay.
And, you know, picked up The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings and went read a whole lot of those books.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, went to college, got married, got a job, started having kids, and I want to read to my kids. And the cool things is schools nowadays really strongly encourage that.
Yeah.
You read together to, you know, help them understand and pick up English and family bond. And the Lloyd Alexander books were a natural choice.
Yes. Since I'm a nerd, you know, I have a MySQL database where I keep all my, keep track of all my reading. So I can look there and see that I picked them up in 2005, which even would have been four. So a little young for these, but I remember thinking at some point, I'm going to want to read these to them. I was kind of strolling through the library and happened across them and went, oh, I remember loving these. And so I picked them up and I read the first couple of them. In the course of about a month, I read The Book of Three and The Black Cauldron and really enjoyed them. And then I'm not sure if I had trouble getting hold of the other titles or not, but I read the other three in a week. So just couldn't wait to get to the end again. And then I picked them up again in 2008. And that's, you know, Ethan was seven at that point, or at least turning seven that year. So that's when I read them to him. And then I read them again in 2010, probably also again to Ethan. And then I just picked them up this year. And so you know, I've read them all five times or so. And this time, actually, our library has all the audiobooks. And so I did read The Book of Three in print, because that was kind of when I had the idea about the comfort reading thing. I thought, I want to read something easy, you know. And I noticed that Amazon had a 50th anniversary of The Book of Three and The Black Cauldron. And so I ordered both of them. And wow. So I have The Black Cauldron with me right here. And The Book of Three, I literally sat down and read it in the space of a day. And and I don't usually do that. I'm not a super, super fast reader. But, you know, it felt like putting on, you know, a nice fitting pair of shoes, you know, just getting right back into it. The Black Cauldron, I'm taking it a little slower just because we're doing that one for Take Me to Your Reader.
Right.
But
so what is it that makes this a comfort read? I mean, you explained the feeling of the comfort read. It's like having, you know,
yeah,
that old shirt or those old shoes and what is a comfort read for you?
I mean, yeah, that's a question that I will probably want to ask any guest that I have on to talk about their comfort read was, what is it about this? So I appreciate you taking on the interviewer role here. Sure. I mean, part of it is just that, and this is very specific to, you know, a little boy, a young boy reading a book like this with an adolescent boy as a protagonist, right? Mm-hmm. And there's something in there about representation, Colin, that we can talk about another time.
Sure.
But, you know, Taran was me, right? Like, I could put myself right into that character, like Luke Skywalker, you know, right? He was the person I could strongly identify with. And so I think the comfort there comes from just the feeling that it gave me at that age. And I remember it vividly. I remember this was the first set of books where there was a relationship angle in there. And it's not ever super, super out in the open. It's not a romance novel by any means.
No.
But by the end of this series, you know, I remember thinking, oh, you know, that would be really cool to fall in love, you know, and for a sixth grade boy, you know, that's something, because you kind of still think girls have cooties, but
well, and they don't like frogs anymore.
Right. but yeah, I think that's a large part of it. And then there's something too about, and the way the comfort worked for me this time is Taran as a character is so relentlessly good, relentlessly noble. You know, people are shades of gray in real life. And so there's something nice in fiction where you find someone who is, you know, has faults, but is just so good.
Yeah. One of the things that I liked about, I agree with you, what you said about him being so noble and so good, mm-hmm. but he actually engages with temptation towards selfishness and power and bullying and being baited into doing things that, you know, out of anger or jealousy or pride.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that engagement with those topics, which I think is really real.
Mm.
So, I mean, he almost always makes the right choice.
Right.
And when he doesn't make the right choice, he then later regrets his bad choices. So it's a great, I want to say, learning tool or allegory of what proper behavior is supposed to be.
Right. Yeah, he definitely takes responsibility when he makes a wrong decision. And, you know, another thing I love about it, and this is, I kind of want to transition and talk about what do we love about these books? Because I had started reading them, and we were talking about doing them for the podcast because The Black Cauldron is on Disney Plus.
Right.
And I think I had read The Book of Three, and then you started reading them. And I think, you know, you tore through them in just a few days, right?
It took me like 5 or 6 days.
Yeah. But I remember we met for a disc golf, and you're like, so I started reading the Book of Three, and we're like, oh, it's so good. It's so good. We should probably back up and say sort of in broad strokes what these books are about.
Okay.
You know, what genre is this, Colin?
This is high fantasy.
Yes. Which is not in my wheelhouse, really. And no. I wonder to some extent if with the early exposure to this uncomplicated, easy to read high fantasy, that I think I really struggled with things that are more opaque, where Alexander's prose is very clear. You know, he doesn't go into, there's no 10 pages describing the landscape that they're traversing, right? It's very easy to follow. And part of that is because it's targeted a younger audience, but mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like sometimes it's a mistake, to go into that much detail. And it doesn't appeal to me. I know it does appeal to other folks. I know you kind of like world building, right?
I like world building, and I enjoy a richly described, scene setting. Mm-hmm. Maybe not too much on the architecture side. Love you, Dean Koontz, but you know, there are limits.
He does love his architecture, though.
And he does it really well.
Yeah, yeah. So these are about they focus on a main character, Taran, and he is, I don't know, 14, somewhere around there, 14, 15.
I had pictured him more like 11, probably because that's closer to my age when I read it, but it's not really called out.
Right.
He's not a child, but he's nowhere near a man.
Mm-hmm. And by the end of the series, he's a man, a young man, but still a man. And so I figure, I think when I first read it, I pictured him as 11 or 12. Mm-hmm. This time I thought probably more like 14. Old enough to where he could kind of consider himself a man, but would see someone like Ilani, who's about his age, as just a girl. Because I don't think he would have said that if she was, 17 or 18.
Probably not.
Yeah. But he is assistant pig keeper at Caer Dalbyn, under the protection of this old enchanter, Dalbyn. Mm-hmm. And the actual pig keeper is Kahl, who's an old warrior, mm-hmm. Though Taran doesn't know it, which I think is great.
No. Yeah.
And, you know, typical kind of fantasy trope, right? Yearns for more, wants adventure, wants excitement.
Teach me how to sword fight. Teach me how to do this. When can we go do that?
Yeah. Little whiny, wants to go to Tashi Station, pick up some power converters.
Yes.
But, you know, he finds out about, great things happening in the world and Aron Deathlord, who is the, the Sauron character. And maybe we should talk about that elephant in the room, right? In a sense, somebody might say, well, these are Lord of the Rings light. And I couldn't gainsay them about that. I'd be like, yeah, they kind of are. There's a lot of very close one-to-one correspondences of characters.
Maybe.
I mean, obviously.
I would have a hard time drawing a parallel between Taran, who actually does engage in sword fights, with anybody from The Hobbit. Like, it's not Sam. It's not Frodo.
Right. Yeah, but he is the Bilbo or Frodo character, right? Although he's substantially younger. So, and you have Gurgi, who's a Gollum type, right? You have Gwydion, who's an Aragorn type. Of course, technically, Gwydion is a pre-existing character in Welsh mythology and substantially predates Aragorn. So, that's fine. And Dalbyn is sort of your Gandalf,
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't find that to be an insult. And, full disclosure, I prefer these books to The Lord of the Rings by a lot. Even though, prior to getting back into these, I read The Lord of the Rings a couple times. But now coming back to these, I'm like, okay, yeah, I know I remember why I like these so much. Where The Lord of the Rings, I kind of look at it over the shelf and I'm like, I quit halfway through The Two Towers when I was reading it to Ethan. And we finished the first, it's broken into two books. We finished the first book of it. And Ethan said, do we have to keep going? It's kind of boring. And so I've read Lord of the Rings 2.5 times precisely. And one of these times I may pick up the Two Towers again and read the second half and then read the High King, The Return of the King. Yeah. Anyhow, there, any high fantasy is going to be compared to Lord of the Rings. And this, I think, has bearing on why we haven't seen a live action adaptation of these books, just because I feel like there's a cooling down period after The Lord of the Rings where, like The Chronicles of Narnia came out. and the movies did. And they felt like they had to put big battles in them because The Lord of the Rings was so successful. And there are battles in these books, but if you focus, you know, the core of the movie on those, I think you'd miss what these books are about.
Yeah, we're going to talk a lot about that in our podcast about the Black Cauldron.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
So things that we love about these books. The thing that I love about them is the characters, because they're not hollow, you know, undeveloped characters. They're vivid, and every one of them is well drawn. Like, I could read the dialogue of someone and pick who the character was without knowing who had actually said the words. You know, I could very, very easily, if anybody's calling someone a great clodpole, you know that's Dolly.
Yes. Good old Dolly.
Yes. You have Fluter Flam, the wandering bard with the magical harp that won't allow him to color the facts too much.
Nope.
I love the way he talks in third person sometimes. You know, he's like, well, a flam is dauntless.
A flam is valiant.
Yes, a flam is valiant. he's a character that I would love to see on the screen if he was portrayed correctly, of course.
Yes.
Yeah.
I really, so we've been talking about this offline, about the promised Disney live action adaptation of this.
Right.
It's been rumored since 2016. Nothing's come of it, but they've got this new streaming channel, and there's nothing that draws people toward a streaming channel like good, fresh content.
Right.
Although in addition to Star Wars, the other kind of jewel in their crown will be the Rick Riordan adaptation of the Percy Jackson series.
Right. Yeah. So I'm sure they're spending money, but you know, they have money too, so they can do it. Oh,
yes.
Of course, they also have enough money to take a title like this and sit on it for 20 years.
Well, after the results of the movie, The Black Cauldron, that might not have been unwise.
Yeah. Yeah. And for more on that, see our upcoming episode.
Yes.
We will have thoughts about this.
See our published works.
Yes, exactly. But what else, Colin? What do you like about these books?
The adventure, the journey. Mm. You know, Taran being called to somehow at once be an assistant pig keeper, but be thrust into situations where he has to lead people.
Yeah.
This last time that I read it, it struck me that Fluter Flam was the king of his own country.
Right.
And yet, he defers to Taran for members, or issues of leadership.
Right.
So that's not the most common thing, but isn't that kind of every boy's dream to be the man, the guy in charge, the guy calling all the shots?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It says something about Fluter too.
Yeah, it does.
but it also says something, I mean, because that's another thing about these characters is that you have the companions, right? You have Taran and Ailanui and Gurgi and Fluter and Dolly, right? Who are kind of the core characters, and Gwydion comes in and out, but he's kind of the big damn hero, you know? and so I like the fact that he's just kind of brushed in places, right? He'll be there for a little while and then he's off somewhere else, and it stays on the companions most of the time. And like you said, almost every one of these books has a journey of some kind, an adventure of some kind. And I really would like to, I mean, we've talked about this, right? About the different adaptations, because listening to Taran Wander this week, because we were talking about it, and I was on my recollection of what that book was about, I was saying, you know, when they get around to doing adaptations, they don't have to do an actual adaptation of that book. They can just sprinkle that character development through the other books. And I'm not totally sure I'm still on that, but watching that documentary, finding out about the origins of Taran Wander, where Lord Alexander had published the first three and then was ready to publish the fourth, which was going to be the High King.
Right.
And his editor said to him, there's a book missing here that sets this book up. So I get the impression that he had written most of The High King before he went back and wrote Taran Wander.
Yeah. In fact, after we've been talking about it, I went online and I found where his papers are located. And unfortunately, they're not digitized.
Right. They're in BYU, right?
BYU and in the Open Library of Philadelphia.
Okay.
There's two sets of them.
Yeah.
Maybe duplicates, maybe not. I suspect not. Mm-hmm.
But there was a hint of a book focusing on Ailanui.
Yes.
And that's one that I would love to see. And, you know, I feel like someone could also adapt this and decide to tell the tale from the point of Ailanui, and that would be interesting. You'd have to change some things, obviously. But but she's such a good character. I love the way she busts Tarn's chops all the time. The way she just kind of, she negs him all the time. She'll say, he gets that brooch from Adeon in The Black Cauldron. And she says, it gives you a kind of wisdom, which I suppose is what assistant pig keepers need more than anything else.
Well, and then I think when they meet in the first book, she says, intelligence must not be required to be an assistant pig keeper.
Right. I'm sure you're a very good one.
Yes, I'm sure you're very good at it. But she speaks her mind almost with no filter at an unhealthy level that is hilarious to watch the beatdown happening.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's good. I'm not speaking to you anymore.
That happens quite a few times.
Yes, it does. And who doesn't love a Gurgi?
Right. Yeah, Gurgi. I mean, crunchings and munchings. I mean, people who barely remember these books still remember Gurgi. Mm-hmm. I mentioned them to Megan. I was my older sister Megan, who has kids that are younger than Ethan, and I asked her if she had ever read them or if her kids had read them, and she hadn't. And I said, oh, well, Esther's going to love Ailanui.
Oh, yeah.
And I started mentioning the characters, and I said Gurgi, and Megan said, crunchings and munchings for Gurgi? I said, yeah. She's like, oh, okay, I do remember those books. But she probably remembers me reading them and doing my best impression of Gurgi, who I always pictured talking somewhat like Yoda in that pitch and timbre. Mm. But yes.
Yeah.
Yes, brave Gurgi with great slashings and gashings.
Oh, and smitings of head. Oh,
yes. His poor tender head.
Poor tender head.
So let's say, assuming we would recommend these books to other people, and I would.
Yes.
And I think you would. How would you sell it to them?
Boy, if you wanted to read a great set of stories aimed at kids that adults can also like, with high adventure and characters that you will read and learn to love and care for. Mm-hmm. This is where you want to be.
Yeah. I'm not sure I can say it better than that. It's funny because, I mentioned that I didn't come back to these until I had a son. And when I was in college, see, this is the other thing. Somehow I grew up Christian and mm-hmm. never read the Chronicles of Narnia as a kid. I did watch the animated movie and I loved that. And I think I had like picture books of Chronicles of Narnia, but never the actual books. And so then one Christmas, Katie, my sister, she was working at Barnes & Noble at the time, and she picked me up the boxed set of all 7 books. Uh-huh. And so, you know, I tore through those in like a week. And then I kept coming back to those. And so when I started thinking about books to read for Ethan, those ones had made more of an impression on me in the intervening years. And part of that is because the Christian allegory in it is interesting as well. Though I know lots of people have read them who are not Christians and still get a lot out of them. But these books definitely hit a similar spot about the adventuring and the good versus evil.
Yeah, it's a book that calls you toward wanting to be in the adventure and wanting to be good like that. Mm-hmm. You know, because who hasn't been tempted by selfishness or pride or greed or driven by fear mm-hmm. or wanting revenge and then realizing that wasn't the right thing to do? Mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk about just briefly. Not going to go too much longer, but about. One thing that I like is that Aran Deathlord does not make an appearance in any of the books until book 5. He's always there in the background, and everything that's happening, the bad stuff that's happening, is all at his behest and mm-hmm. also Akron, but he doesn't actually, show up in any of the books as a foe. It just all of his minions do. And so you have those great things like the Cauldronborn, who are these silent, eerily, zombies, essentially, but zombies that don't, they aren't out for blood. They're just doing whatever they're ordered to do, and they have no free will. Right. And they're terrifying because of that. The silence of them is something that I'd love to see how you could work that out in a movie. In the book, it's very visceral to me. I'd be curious in a movie.
Well, and you mentioned that there isn't a ton of description in the books, and I think that allows you the headspace to bring into it what you want.
Yeah. Yeah. Or the Huntsmen of Anuvin, right? Where you have them going around and there's this pack of them. And if one of them is slain, the other four or the other in the group kind of get his quickening and yes. and level up their power, right? There can be only one.
Yes. Either kill them all at once or not at all.
Yeah. Yeah. And another thing that I like about these books is that he clearly had a plan, right? Where he knew as he was writing the first book that he was going to have Taran show mercy to the young Gwythaint that he saves, right?
Right.
And it's not till book 5 that thing comes back. And I right. love that he tied those up.
And there are things which carry forward through the books, like Ailanui's bauble.
Right.
And the ring she was given in book 1. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
it's a lot of small details. This will happen time and time and time again as you read the books. They come true later.
Yes. Yeah. I would be curious, if anybody's out there who's read, one or two of these books, but not the whole series, and if they've read them out of order and how they actually hold up. Because I did notice that every time Fluter was introduced, in basically the first scene that we'd meet him, his one of his harp strings would break. and then recapitulate that whole thing about the magic harp.
You'd think that he would, after a book or two, would have picked up on that himself.
You'd think he would have, yeah. Well, I was going to ask what keeps you coming back to these. So I'll throw that one at you, and we'll sign off kind of with this.
Oh, man. So when the coronavirus hit, and we were stuck at home and you couldn't do things, I decided to reread a 22-book series by Brian Jakes called the Redwall series. Mm. And I read the first 10 books in about 3 weeks and needed to move on to something else. So I read 5 or 6 other books. And I had, at that point, read literally thousands of pages. And I wanted something light. And we had talked about doing this as a podcast anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, oftentimes I'll pick up and reread, particularly books I read the kids when they were younger, my sons, just for the memories of, you know, being on the floor and doing voices and teaching them how to pronounce odd names and do things that are fun. So yeah, just the memories, and hadn't read these in a while. So I picked them up again.
Nice. Yeah. It's similar for me. I think it's taken on, I mean, I loved them when I was a kid. But some of the comfort reading aspect comes from those memories. But like you said, reading them to my son, that's part of also what makes them comfort reads, because, you know, he has made that journey now and is a young man. And so you see it differently as a father.
Yeah. Maybe we'll see it in a completely new vein some other day, years down the road.
Yeah, we'll see. And yeah, we'll have to talk about adaptational aspects of that on our Take Me to Your Reader episode, which we'll record at some point.
Yes.
As soon as James has read the books. So cool. Well, Colin, thank you for doing this.
Oh, you're welcome.
And we see each other all the time. I'll see you tomorrow.
Okay, okay, man.
All right. Bye. Well, everybody, I hope you enjoyed this first episode of the Comfort Reads sub podcast of the Who Goes There podcast. And, you know, if you've read these books, let me know, you know, what did they mean to you? And if you're somebody who's out there who's like, you know, those books sound cool, but I've never read them, but my other comfort read is something else. If you want to get a hold of me, if you want to record an episode, just let me know. Reach out to me, feedback@hugospodcast.com, or fill out the contact form on hugospodcast.com, or tweet at me @hugospodcast, and we'll talk about it. If your comfort read is something that I'm completely unfamiliar with, I'll probably want to familiarize myself with it at least, you know, like through one book. But, you know, I'd like to make this a series. And so if you're out there and you have a comfort read that you want to highlight, like I said, reach out to me. I'd love to do it. Of course, I'm going to continue having a regular episode available at the beginning of every month. So if I'm going to do these comfort read episodes, I'll probably release those in the middle of the month just to get more content out there for you. So if you're enjoying this podcast, if you enjoyed this episode, or if you enjoyed my regular episodes, share it with your friends. Leave us a review in iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play or wherever you listen to us. And if you'd like to support me here and on Brief and Not So Brief and Take Me to Your Reader, you can go to patreon.com/hugospodcast and join the growing group of people who are supporting us for as little as $1 a month. And I am working on some ideas. I actually have an episode planned already that's going to be a patron exclusive. So you can get in on the ground floor with that if you sign up to support. Okay, I think that'll do it for this episode. And, you know, may you be comforted. I hope that everybody's okay out there and staying safe.